Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Miten. Miten needs no introduction, but for those of you listening who don't know Miten, Miten is an Osho sannyasin and worldwide famous musician, honored by 1.5 million album sales, and among his fans is the Dalai Lama. I'm so excited to have Miten on the show, and I hope you enjoy it. Miten, to start, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background before meeting Osho.
My time before meeting Osho was an apprenticeship, really, for the music that I ended up playing for him. Because before I came to Osho, I was a musician. I was a rock musician, a folk rock musician, and I thought that music was meant for being a rock star and making money and ambition. I didn't really realize what sacred music was, you know. But I knew it was sacred. I just didn't have that kind of vocabulary at the time. I was writing songs and going on tour and learning how to create something from myself that was authentic. And that's what I was learning to do. So, you know, when I came to Osho, I didn't want anyone to know that I've been a musician because I needed to stop the identification. I'd been damaged and hurt by the rock and roll business. I'd done too many drugs. And it was just not fulfilling. And when I discovered Osho, and I discovered him through a book, books called No Water, No Moon, and it's a book on Zen parables. I read that book and I left my old life behind. I left my family, I left my record company, my band. Nobody knew where I'd gone. I just disappeared from the world. And I came to Osho, and I didn't want to be a musician. I didn't want to. Anyway, when I heard the music that the musicians were playing in the ashram, I felt humbled, totally humbled by it. I didn't think I could ever become a musician who could play like that, because it was so free and so from the heart and so strong and so unselfconscious, you know. It was fantastic. And so it was like healing for me. I just used to come every time to the Sufi dances and to the music groups and sing and cry and laugh and just heal myself from the world that I'd come from. So that's the old life moving into the new life. And so when the music did come back, eventually it came back because I just wanted to say thank you to the master, and I found out I could do that. I think the first song that came to me was Fallen Leaves. Do you know that one? Like falling leaves blowing away, words disappear, and all I can say is I love you.
Wonderful.
To love you, blessed one, you set me free like fallen leaves. So that was the first song, I think. And I played it to my friends, and there in the commune where I was living with the sannyas commune, and they say, wow, it was beautiful. So I sang it for them, and then more songs came through, So I was healed, and I could just sing my heart and not try to sing a pop song or something that would be sexy or exciting or whatever it was I thought I was doing. But when it came back, it was real, and that was the gift of Osho, you know. I learned how to deepen silence through music. That's what Osho taught me. The music appears from the silence. There's a silence before you start the music. There has to be. You have to wait until you feel that silence, you know, that silence of meditation. And it's only a breath away, but it has to be connected with. And then you move. The music comes from that space. So it comes from silence. And then it unfolds into a journey, a story, a mantra, whatever. And then it disappears again back into the silence. And that silence that we feel at the end of the piece is deeper than the silence that we were feeling before the piece began. And then so forth and so forth. So when you're in a concert now with us for 2 or 3 hours, and you're moving deeper and deeper into this silence, and this feeling of joy and laughter as the songs unfold. That's pure Osho. And of course, people don't relate it to that, or they don't in that way. Although some people say to me, some old sannyasins will come to me and say something like, "I saw Osho dancing behind you tonight," you know, and things like this. It's really beautiful, you know. But it's basic. What Deva and I share with the world is basically pure Osho connection, you know.
I'd like to share that just yesterday, before this interview, you sent me a couple of devotional songs that you just composed in Peru, and they brought tears.
They weren't composed in Peru. They were composed 10, 20 years ago, those two songs. Oh. But they were new to me. They came back to me as old friends, and I was singing them as if they were new, because for me they were new. That's what I mean. The songs never get old.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, I just didn't want to interrupt you. It was just to let you know. We used to sing those songs in the commune, in the Medina commune in England. And So quite old songs.
Oh, amazing, but they felt so fresh and new, but that explains they're so charged with Osho energy, and they brought tears to my eyes, and I felt a very strong longing for the master Osho, of course. And I felt like all I want in my life is to be with Osho. And then Osho is not here anymore, so I was very sad for a moment. And then I realized all of a sudden, well, actually, Osho is here. Through your songs, Osho is here, is alive, and I can connect with that energy. And I am with Osho now. So I wanted to ask you, do you feel the same way? And how do you explain this?
I don't think we can ever explain it. I think it's too big a mystery, you know? The love of a disciple, devotee towards a master is a crazy love, man. It's nothing you can describe in words. Sometimes we can. That's why you feel it in the songs, because you feel it. It comes through in a different way. But you know, if you're Rumi, you can describe it in words. But a guy like me, you know, I it's too much of a mystery. I don't know. I feel like I was saying earlier that I don't. When you say I'm with Osho, what I hear is you're with a feeling. You're with so it's something that it's not without you. It's that you are that. That's how, because that's why you feel it, and that's the gift really of seeing Osho is not a person, you know, but he's an environment. It's an environment, and it's called Osho, or it's an attitude you have towards life, and it's called Osho, you know. And so then you're in it, and there's no disappearing, there's no vacation, you're just in it. And that's the way I feel with what happened to me. I was never physically that close to him, you know. I was never. All I got was the pure essence of the transmission. I didn't get the man. I was too far away from him. I saw him. I loved him from a distance, but I didn't get the man. I just got more and more this kind of tidal wave of loving energy that just hit me like a hurricane, you know, like a whisper in a hurricane. That's another nice song that came to me. You are the rhythm in the falling rain. You are the song in the rolling sea. You are the whisper in a hurricane. You're everything to me. And that was one song that came to me many years ago. A whisper in a hurricane. That's how I feel. That's maybe a way to describe it. A whisper in a hurricane, because whatever that means. But it feels like a poetic way to say that there's a connection to the master that's overwhelming and huge, you know. And it's not something that's even bigger than us. It's just we all are the master. We're all the master's love, and that's what he was hoping that we would get one day, you know.
Wow, this is so beautiful, Miten, and I feel overwhelmed, and I'm really struggling now to put my thoughts together because I really feel this wave, this hurricane of Osho energy, and all of a sudden I feel like, you know, I just want to be with Osho again. So I'd like to share with you that my favorite song of yours is So Much Magnificence. Every mm-hmm. time I hear that song, immediately I feel Osho's presence.
Yeah.
And for me, that song is very powerful, totally charged with Osho energy. So I'd like to know from you, what's the story behind that song? How did it came about?
Well, first of all, when I first came to Osho, one of the things that blew my mind was so many hundreds and hundreds of people all singing together. And I never heard it until one time somebody had a cassette and they played it to me. And I was so intrigued by the sound of ecstasy of so many voices singing so much magnificence. And this song is older than me. There was a great singer and songwriter there in the ashram called Anubhava. Anubhava conceived So Much Magnificence. That's why it's so seeped in Osho. He was playing that in Osho's presence way before I got to it. And when I got to it, I started to sing it in the ashram. Everybody, it was not so sung, you know. And but to me, it was a song that always stayed with me. So later, much later, when I came to make that CD Songs for the Inner Lover, I recorded it again. And because I'd been playing it every night in the concerts, and it was obviously full of power and full of energy. Every time we played it, we had people weeping and singing and crying, and the men would all be standing up and singing, "There is so much magnificence in the ocean," or "To the ocean," or, you know, whatever we used to sing. And so much, that's how So Much Magnificence came about, really. It was originally composed by Anubhava, who is now known as Peter McKenna. But he composed So Much Magnificence. And what happened with it is that I just felt so strongly that it was my duty to share it with the people that didn't know Peter and hadn't heard it in the ashram. So I put it on that CD, and that beautiful piano solo at the start is by Manish Damore, who is a very talented keyboard player who much younger than me, who was in the ashram for a while, and Manish did that beautiful piano solo there for me. And we just brought it to life. So we played it and played it every night, and we still love to play it. But it's very strong when the men stand and sing for the feminine energy. There is so much magnificence near the ocean. So the men have this opportunity to thank and give thanks to the feminine energy, not only in the room, but in themselves also. And the women, they stand up and they sing hallelujah, or the hallelujahs. So when we all sing together like that, there Osho comes, you know.
Well, to me, even though I've never been with you doing that, I feel like Osho comes, even just playing it with a stupid iPod. I don't know, it's so powerful. It's really powerful. Yeah. As soon as I hear the first notes of the keyboard, I feel like shiver inside, and something happens physically. It's not my imagination. I have a physical reaction, you know, as if it's such a door that gets straight into that hurricane of energy we were talking about before. It's magic. I don't know how to explain it, but it works without fail for years now.
Yeah. Well, one technical thing that is in the ingredient there is that, and you mentioned keyboard. It's not a keyboard. It's a real piano. So, and when you have a real instrument and you have microphones on a real instrument, there's all kinds of harmonics. And it moves air. They say, you know, there's instruments that move air, like wooden instruments. And so there's a certain frequency, there's a certain energy that comes through onto the digital tapes and whatever else that is captured somehow. And you can feel it, and that's what happened with that piano solo. It is a door, and it was Manish just took beautiful care, and he has a very beautiful way to open the heart with his piano playing. So, and then for me it was so beautiful to sing it, not only with David, but I had a very beautiful girl come from the London Gospel Choir. She's a black girl, and she just beautiful singer. It was like liquid chocolate when she sang the hallelujahs, you know. It was just so beautiful. There were two of them with her and David singing those hallelujahs. It just was a beautiful experience, and we did capture something in there.
You did, for sure. I'd like to move on and ask something about the fact that you brought your music well beyond the circle of the Osho community. You, Deva, of course, and your band are worldwide famous musicians, and you achieved success out of the world of Osho. Many people enjoy your music even without knowing your connection with Osho. How did this happen? How did you manage to reach out to the world beyond the Osho community?
It was all organic. It was not a plan. It was not even, we didn't think in those terms of how to expand it. We just watched it expand. When we left India, we started to give voice workshops. That's what we called them. Deva and I, we had a little Mitsubishi van that we bought off Prem Joshua, who's another guy you should interview. And Deva and I used to go around to all the sannyas centers. They would invite, mainly in Italy at the time. When we left India, we went and lived in Italy for a while. So we would just go around to all the centers, and then we would come up to Germany and same thing. We'd go to Munich Center, Cologne Center, and we'd do these weekends where we would sing So Much Magnificence and all these Osho songs, and we would do some voice training for people and things like that. Just have a beautiful weekend with satsang and Osho and some divine healing exercises and stuff that we'd learn in the ashram, and some meditations. And then we would come back and it would be, wow, more and more people, you know. And then we would come back again and then they'd say, oh, we can't do it in the meditation. We've hired a church. And so, okay. And then the next time we would come, oh, it's too many people. We've hired a theater. And that's basically the way it's grown. It's just it just carried on growing. And the thing that first opened the door was that we had a connection to all the sannyasins through my songs and through my connection with the music in the ashram. That's why people would say, yeah, we could call up centers and say, you know, would you like us to come and meet Smiten and da-da-da, and they'd say, oh, yeah, it'd be great. So that's how we did it. So that opened that first door. And then after about 8 years, Deva discovered or rediscovered the Gayatri Mantra, and the Gayatri Mantra is a foundation on which Deva and I actually do everything. It's the Gayatri is the absolute cornerstone, you know. So she found it. She'd been singing it as a child, and she'd chanted it. Her parents had been chanting it to her at the birth and before the birth and after the birth. She chanted it all through her childhood. This is an incredible deep mantra that she was given at a really early age. So she heard it again, and we ended up recording it. And as soon as we recorded it and we put it on a CD called The Essence, which was the first thing that we'd ever done for Deva. Deva's first CD. She was making small steps into her own voice and her own expression of music and how she expressed herself as an Osho devotee, you know. So she recorded The Essence, and we recorded it actually in her mother's apartment here where I'm talking to you now, where Deva was born, with her parents chanting. So she was chanting it again in this place, you know, like it was just an incredible energy. And suddenly, when we released it, we thought we were just making a CD for, you know, our sannyasin friends to do massage with, you know. And we didn't really look beyond that. It was not any plan. And suddenly, in America, some people got hold of it, and it became like a big hit. Everybody was buying it, and it was through all the yoga. It was the yoga scene in America. There wasn't a big yoga scene in Italy or Europe or anything, but there was huge beginning of what it is now, which is even bigger. But back then, it was just big enough to create a platform for me and David to go and play to them. So we'd become, from being Osho's musicians, we'd become yoga's musicians now. And the yoga world was, in America, was opening up more and more people. It wasn't so, you know, like focused on a particular guru. Yoga is, you know, it's different. So we were just playing to more and more yogis and yoginis and more people coming. And then it just grew to the next thing. And you know, and it just carried on, and it still is. Like, we just came back from a tour of America, and the audience is still growing. It's incredible.
It is indeed. And if I understand correctly, you and Deva have been kind of pioneers in the mantra singing type of music, which has now become mainstream. Were you aware at the beginning that you were onto something, that you were launching a new trend, which is now a worldwide trend?
No, not really. We felt that we'd made something unique. We realized that the combination of the music, which was again Manish Damore and Rishi, our drummer in the band now, we realized that there was a mix of instrumentation and Deva's voice and the material itself, which nobody had thought to do before, because they just didn't. You know, I remember being with there was a sannyasin record label, New World, New Earth, something, New Earth, and they were saying to me, You know, nobody wants singing, you know, because it was a sort of new age thing. And that was this kind of attitude. It was like, no, nobody wants singing. They want piano or flutes or whale sounds and things like that. But nobody wanted singing, you know. And so we weren't thinking that we were doing anything special. But because it was Deva, and because Deva is such an amazing singer, because she doesn't emote, she's not an emotional singer. So you go beyond all that emotional feeling into a meditative space, and that's what her voice does. So with that and the mantras, it wasn't like singing, it was something else. It was singing, but it was so deep that it just touched something in everyone. And we see now we, you know, at the time there was two albums, really three albums. There was The Essence with Deva, there was Pilgrim Heart with Krishna Das, and there was Jayutal's album. And those three albums were pivotal, really, in this whole movement. That's what kicked the whole thing off. Now there's, and then afterwards came, many girl singers chanting mantras and with grooves and everything else. And it just created a window, really, that where everybody could join and everybody could sing. And you didn't have to be a great songwriter. You just had the mantra already there. You didn't have to think about lyrics. You could just take it and say, then once you come into contact with the mantra, then it's up to you how much of your personality and your ego you put into the music, because you're naked. Once you're with a mantra, you're naked as a musician. If you try and make it emotional or in any way sexy or anything, it just sounds ridiculous. It's not something you can play with. You have the opportunity to be naked, and I think that's a really good thing. So that's how I see our music. We're naked. Deva and I make love every time we're on stage playing the music. Every time we make love, we play in music. That's what we do. And we don't make babies, we make CDs, you know. We have good birth control, you know.
That's a safe way. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you so much for that. And I'd like to now change a little bit topic and move on and talk a little bit about Wild Country, because I know that after the release of this docu-series on Netflix, which has been watched by lots of people and attracted huge media attention, you decided to speak out. I saw you went on Facebook and you did a Q&A, live Q&A event. So I wanted to ask you, what prompted you to do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, some people who love me and Deva, who don't know about our show, were confused. They wrote, say, what? Tell me, how do I put you and Deva together with that scene, you know? So I thought, oh, well, maybe it would be a good time to, because what we always kind of share stories and stuff about our time with Osho. But because it was so obvious that, you know, it was a different way after 30 years, there's a movie, you know, and I just felt like, okay, the only way you can ask me a question is if I go live, and then I'll try and, you know, answer some of your questions and give you some perspective of how it all was from my point of view, you know. And so that's why it happened. That's why I just put myself into a place where people could ask me questions, and I could also internalize too, because I don't have any answers either, you know. So it was good for me to talk it through and talk to people, and everything helps, I think. And because it was, you know, the thing is with the whole connection is that it's so mysterious that if you think you know what the guru is doing, you're probably wrong. So if you think the guru is building a city in Oregon, you're probably wrong. There's probably something much deeper going on, which, and of course, some of us got that and some people didn't. And so some people got very disenchanted, some sannyasins, or they felt that they, you know, they related to the kind of scandal, and rather than looking beyond that into actually what are you learning about yourself in this incredible opportunity, an amazing opportunity. You couldn't get a therapy group like that. You couldn't pay anything to get a therapy group like that. It was real stuff, you know, and it was just an amazing learning experience. It was an experience that he gave us, and the reason he gives us those experiences is because he's not scared. He has no fear. So he's like, I'm not controlling this, but look what's happening. Oh my God, they're bringing in a whole load of homeless people, you know, whatever. It was just him watching it all and saying, knowing that we were learning so much. It was very intense, you know, but incredibly intense. Like you couldn't, everything, it was just everything was happening. And so you could, you didn't even have the time to digest it or to analyze it. You just lived it and let it, you just let it be. And so whatever Sheila was doing was whatever Sheila was doing, you know. But for me, it was the most incredible learning experience. You know, can you imagine? I was just a guy from London, you know, and, you know, in the city, and then somehow finding myself out on that ranch, and the space and the clean air and the people and the music and Osho and the smell of the herbs and the sage, you know, it was an incredible, incredible thing. Yeah. So as far as the movie goes, it was a good movie. I thought it was a movie that began, had a sort of orgasmic peak to it all, you know, and then it ended happily. All the Oregon, you know, it was like a happy ending. It was all the people from Oregon, they felt like they'd won and they'd beaten the beast. And it was a great feeling for them. I felt, okay, fantastic, you know. And anyway, we're sannyasins happy. It didn't really, you know, it was just a great learning for us. And for the other people, yeah, they just had a good time and they had something to tell their grandkids and, you know, so it was, on that level, I thought it was great. But I did hear that the two guys who did the movie, they had actually filmed something like a day in the life of a sannyasin on the ranch, a normal sannyasin like me or somebody, you know, and they said it was really great footage, but it just didn't fit in the movie, you know, because they had an agenda. They wanted somewhere, they wanted to make this cult, you know, thing, and you know, they wanted to focus on Osho being a little scary, and you know, the pictures they used in the you know, to advertise the movie had Osho's eyes, you know, like as if, you know, he was hypnotizing everyone and all that kind of stuff. But it's okay. Osho is bigger than all that stuff. So I was a little disturbed, but not really. My friend who I stayed with when I was recovering from the heart surgery had nightmares about Sheila. after the first episode, you know, he was like, it really came down onto him. So it was a very heavy time. I mean, we didn't know that the National Guard worked so closely. We kind of felt it could be, you know, but it luckily and happily, you know, it became an incredible experience for many people.
Okay, thank you for sharing that. And I also heard that the director of Wild Wild Country, they actually loved the Sannyasins and Osho much more than what they could express. So hopefully there will be like a sequel, and they had to be commercially oriented, and, you know, still a movie that has to sell, and, you know, all those kind of scandals sell more than, you know, a love affair between a disciple and a master. So, but I feel like through the interviews, it comes out, you know, you can pick the vibe that those guys were actually fascinated by what was happening there. The next question would be about the Dalai Lama. So I can't complete this episode without asking you about the Dalai Lama. So I understand that you met the Dalai Lama in person, and he very much enjoys your music. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, the last thing I heard was somebody who was living in the monastery up there in Dharamsala, was that he loved so much magnificence near the ocean, and he would play it. And that just made me so happy to hear that. He said often he would have it on. So that was one thing. But way before that, we were invited to... It was in Munich, invited to a conference, a weekend conference in Munich, that was going to be attended by the Dalai Lama and scientists. And it was a conference to talk about how spirituality and science can meet and merge and understand each other, and what they can learn from each other. So, and we were invited to sing, to play the concert at the conference in the Saturday night. Before the conference started Saturday morning, there was a special intimate gathering with His Holiness and the scientists, just in a room together, where they could ask him questions and he would talk, and somehow they would just come together before the concert began. And we were invited to come in on the meeting and play a song, play something. And so the meeting was very interesting. It was beautiful. You know, he made some good jokes. He told one scientist that he said that he remembered that the scientist had said that attachment to ideas in the scientific world is not good, because it means that you don't go further, and it becomes an attachment. And if you're attached to an idea, it's not good. So the Dalai Lama said, yeah, I remember you saying that. And since then, I've been practicing non-attachment to Buddhism. And you know, he's a funny guy, and a beautiful spirit. And at the end of the meeting, they called Mitten and Deva, and we knew that his favorite mantra was Om Tare Tutare Ture Svaha. And so we sang it to him in our way, you know, from one of the CDs. It's one of the ones that we actually was composed by Praful, who's a great sax player and also a great composer. Praful composed many of Deva's really big popular mantras were composed by Praful. He's another guy you should interview. I'm giving you some good ideas, I think.
Yes, indeed. I've got a long list now.
Yeah. And so they called us up, and we walked up with the guitar, and he gave us the white scarves, and he held our hands and sat down, and we stood with the guitar, and we played him this song, Om Tare Tutare, and he closed his eyes, And then when he realized what we were seeing, he opened them again. So I don't think he could believe that the mantra could be sung in such a way by two white Western people, you know, with court, with guitar and everything. And then he closed his eyes again, and he just sang, just came into the vibe with us, and the room began to fill up with spirit. And we just carried on chanting for a while. And then we let the mantra slowly disappear and enter back into a silence. And the room was still, no movement. Everybody just with their eyes closed and just breathing and feeling the gratitude of life. And then eventually Dalai Lama opened his eyes and he looked at us and he told us, beautiful, beautiful music. And that was a beautiful moment for us there to receive that, you know. So, yeah, those moments are precious.
Wow, this is so beautiful. And I could picture you guys in that room singing with the Dalai Lama, and I could really feel, like, in my mind I had this image, and very powerful, beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. So we are heading towards the end of the show, and you mentioned a couple of times during the interview that you had some serious health condition and you have been very ill just recently. So I'm wondering, what did it happen? Because I don't know the details. And what did you learn from that experience?
Well, what happened was I had some pains in my chest. And I knew there was a problem, but I didn't really give it any energy. I was feeling, it's okay, whatever, you know. It'll go away, kind of thing. And it didn't go away, and it became obvious that I was somehow in trouble. I couldn't even walk up a hill, you know, I just couldn't do it without feeling great pain in my arm. So there was something. But we were just leaving Australia to go to Costa Rica, which is where we do our programs down there, our Tantra Mantra program for couples. It's a holiday group, but it's for couples, and it's we have, like, you know, about 30 couples or something all come and share. We do a beautiful tantra with the mantras all chanting together. It's very beautiful. And we were going down to Costa Rica for that, but and our Gayatri festival, which followed, but I didn't get that far. My friend Stefan, who runs the Blue Spirit Resort where we do our workshops, he's a doctor, and he arranged for me to go to the hospital in San Jose, and they did the stent operation, and then they found out that I was lucky to be alive, that my artery was almost absolutely totally blocked, and if there was just a little bit of blood getting through the artery because it was so blocked. So I had to immediately have a open heart surgery. And they had to organize for me to do it in Houston in Texas because they didn't have the equipment to do it in San Jose and Costa Rica. So Dave and I flew straight to Houston. They'd already arranged all the things, and the next day I was on the operating table, and they do the whole thing where they cut you, or they just go through the ribs and everything, like a chainsaw, and open up the whole front of your body, and they fixed up the heart. They did put the artery back. It sounds intense now, but what I've learned is that they do these operations, you know, every day. So it's like, it's no big deal. But so anyway, it was a big deal in a way, but in another way, as I talk to you now, it feels almost like a dream. And I've got the scars, so I know it wasn't. But there were some incredible deep moments with Deva and I, which just brought us into such a deep and loving, warm connection with each other. And it's just, Deva and I have been together 27 years now. And our love affair is just, it just continues like the music to blossom. So I'm very grateful to have Deva as a companion and a friend and someone who feels Osho as deeply as me, and who has found a way to share Osho through her creativity. So yeah, the heart like the sun is always shining, you know. So what to say?
That's wonderful, and thank you for sharing this last part between you and Deva, because it resonates with me a lot. You know, I'm my beloved is Chetna, and we've been together for 12 years now, and we're both sannyasins, and we believe that what keeps us together is Osho's energy and meditation. And we feel like, you know, we are together, really. There is love, and there is this kind of freshness, and we keep learning, we keep growing, and we feel like we're going deeper and deeper, and so beautiful. Like, I don't know, when you were talking about you and Deva, that's how I feel with Chetna, and we have the same understanding of Osho, and, you know, I can't see myself living with someone around me who doesn't love Osho as deeply as I do. So that's beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, that's great. We were lucky to find somebody to share the journey with, huh? So blessed.
Blessed indeed. Well, Miten, so thank you so much. It's been a real honor talking to you. I really, really enjoyed it. And you shared so many beautiful facts and interesting stories, and I didn't know you so well, so it's been amazing for me personally to get to know and capture your story and the vibe and the energy. I'm sure it will radiate through the podcast. So thank you so much.
All right, Swaram, thank you very much. I enjoyed chatting to you, man, and I wish you all the best with your project and your work and your life in general and your love. Just keep sharing your light. That's all we can do.
Oh, wonderful. We'll do that. Thank you so much.
Okay. Namaste.
Namaste.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.